This is the Quality News Network. Off the Costa Beirut today, an Israeli warship was hit by an unmanned aircraft rigged with explosives. Israeli officials report that the ship suffered serious damage and is now headed back to Israel. There were no immediate reports of casualties, but Al Jazeera reports that four sailors are missing. Meanwhile, Israel continues its offensive in Lebanon, targeting its airport and main roads in a bid to disable its infrastructure. The head of Hezbollah issued a statement saying members are ready for war with Israel following the destruction of Hezbollah's headquarters in Lebanon. In Gaza City, Israel struck the Palestinian Economic Ministry offices. Earlier, gunmen blew open a 20-foot hole in the Egypt-Gaza border wall, allowing dozens of stranded Palestinians into Gaza City. In Russia, President Bush refused to pressure Israel to stop its attacks in both Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, as the Lebanese prime minister and the Palestinian president have urged him to do. But he did say he would urge Israel to spare civilians from harm and acknowledge that the attacks could dismantle the Lebanese government. In Southern California, two wildfires have now merged and now cover more than 95 square miles. Officials report more than 100 buildings, including homes, have already been destroyed. At the United Nations, Security Council members expect to vote on a resolution against North Korea tomorrow. They'll meet later today to discuss a deal struck with China, which had vowed to veto a Japanese-drafted resolution. It called for sanctions over the North's recent missile launches. In Iraq today, 12 Iraqi soldiers were ambushed and killed at an army checkpoint, and at least 14 people died in sectarian attacks in and around Baghdad. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is expected to make his first visit to Washington later this month. In Russia today, President Bush met with democracy activists who expressed concerns over civil liberties violations in the country. Mr. Bush said he would relay those concerns to Russian President Vladimir Putin during tomorrow's meeting. In Washington, CIA officer Valerie Plame and her husband have set up a website. It seeks donations to help defray the cost of a lawsuit they filed yesterday against several Bush administration officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney. In Nebraska, an appeals court has reinstated a voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage. And in Tennessee, the state Supreme Court ruled that voters should be given a say on the issue. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Japan's central bank raised interest rates today for the first time in 6 years. The Bank of Japan raised the rate from 0 to 0.25 percentage point. The Commerce Department reports that retail sales were down 0.1% last month. One economist blames high gasoline prices, which he says are causing consumers to spend less. The chief executives of GM and Renault Nissan are scheduled to meet late today in Detroit. The head of Nissan has reportedly already stated that he does not want to chair the alliance if it comes to pass. Three British bankers have pleaded not guilty on Enron-related fraud charges. The men arrived in Houston this week after being extradited from London. FedEx has been subpoenaed on possible antitrust violations by airlines. The Department of Justice is investigating whether the air cargo transportation industry has engaged in price fixing. At least 34 state attorney generals plan to sue 7 computer memory chip makers. The companies are accused of overcharging their customers from 1998 to 2002. Today, computer security company McAfee announced that it fixed a potentially devastating problem in its antivirus technology. Still, many businesses and government agencies are upset because they were not told of the flaw until today. Light sweet crude settled at $77.03 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 107 points, NASDAQ down 17, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
take to look at the week's events from every angle, even from down under. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. Fourth Estate Radio is brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Get in on the conversation by calling 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. And now, your trans-global hosts, John Fox and Bruce Birch.
Saturday night, it's Fourth Estate Radio. I am John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and on the other side of the planet is the one, the only, my best mate on the internet, in the network, Bruce Birch. How you doing?
All right, I'm doing great, John, and you've got a really packed show for us tonight. I guess want to tell you that I am amazed at some of the things you're able to pull off, John, but not the least of which is the fact that you're able to get Robert Fisk a while back and get an interview, which we're going to do tonight at some point, right?
Well, yeah, see, I kind of figure not a whole lot of stories tonight, but with what's been developing over the last few days in the Middle East, I kind of am naming this show The Semantics of Reporting Revisited today, because As things go into meltdown, you have to be able to listen through the spin and listen to, as those who had caught the interview last time where Anthony Lowenstein interviewed Fisk here in Sydney, he speaks about the semantics of reporting. And, you know, I think we need a real reminder, because Bruce, you and I were just talking on the phone earlier this week how after we originally aired the lecture and this Fisk interview, the way you observe the reporting of the Middle East has changed fundamentally. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I was sitting here the other night after I did my show during the week, and I think it was Thursday when everything started, popping off over there in the Middle East. And what I found was that I was sitting there watching CNN, and I had my kids around. I was trying to tell them what was going on and why it was important, blah, blah, blah. And my son pointed out to me, he said, Dad, why is it that, look at that woman, and she looks evil. And I was like, okay, well, I looked at the television, looked up from what I was doing, looked at the television, Paula Zahn, who was anchoring, supposedly being the impartial person, was sitting there, and she had bloodlust in her eyes. I'm telling you, the woman looked like she was ready to take up a sword and go hack her some Palestinians. I mean, it was just crazy. And then he says to me, Dad, how come they're talking, he goes, they're supposed to talk about both sides of the story, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, they just talked about the one side for 30 minutes, and now they're going to give the other side like 3 minutes.
Right.
And of course, you can guess.
Oh, yeah, exactly how the balance of time went. And Anthony Lowenstein and I were having a conversation. We've had many this week. And we were talking about exactly that. Just on the ABC, Australia's ABC, which is being picked apart by the Howard government as we speak, had one of these, three-way panels. They had I believe it was, they had the hosts, they had, a Zionist pundit, they had a Lebanese pundit, and they had a Palestinian pundit. And the Zionist pundit was able to go on for, 5-6 minutes, and the Palestinian pundit was shot down after 30 seconds and run over. And if this is what you call balanced, if this is what you call balanced reporting, you're just insane. I mean, well, I have no other way to...
Let me ask you a question, John. Before we go any further into the program, define Zionist to me.
Well, boy, that's a hard one, isn't it? Isn't that hard? Well, I mean, as far as I understand it, the Zionists believe that they are entitled to these to what is supposedly historic Israel and Jerusalem. And so it's this, As far as I get really confused in this situation. Bob actually pulled me up that I was completely kind of misguided in one aspect of what's happened throughout the last few days, and I kind of blame that somewhat on the semantics of the reporting because you get so little actual information from one side of the storyteller.
The reason why I'm asking this, okay, and you know, it is somewhat a loaded question, but I'm going to look up the whatever. I'm going to check that out on Wikipedia just to see what they have to say too. But I think part of the semantics, if you want to talk about the semantics of reporting, to me, or the semantics of language in general, is, you know, one of the things that we've seen in this struggle over there in the Middle East is that everyone seems to be focused more on the religious labels rather than the actual, because it's a religious fight. It's a sectarian violence between these people. It's not a country that's fighting another country because of oil or because of power. It's founded in a religious struggle. So, you know, we can call them Israelis, and we can call the other ones Muslims, or Palestinians or Lebanese, right? But does that really get down to the true nature of what's going on there? Does that by labeling them in those terms, does it really get down to the true nature of the struggle? And
no.
My answer is I don't think so.
No. And you were very right to pull me up, and I was being overly simplistic with the way that I put it. But I was putting up what basically repeating exactly what your son was kind of saying.
Sure.
Showing how they set these debates up, and it is not a fair time, even exchange debate. It is absolutely biased through time, through who speaks over who, and the fact that you'll see it happen in a lot of places where, you know, the person who's speaking on behalf of the Israelis, maybe that's a better way to put it, will get most of the segments, and then the last 20 seconds will go to whoever the Palestinian reporter might be.
Right.
And that's considered balance. And I think it's garbage, to not use any of the nasty words.
It's bat crap. It's bat crap. Yes.
Okay. Well, and
bat
squeeze. You know, bat squeeze. Gail and I have been talking about this because, I mean, you want to get Gail angry, get talking about this subject, because she actually did live down there for a time and has a bit of a feel for what the atmosphere is like. And she was up until 2 weeks before the Intifada broke out in '87.
Well, you ought to see if she'd be willing to come on mic and talk about it. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that we're missing in all of this is you know, we're hearing the pundits, we're hearing the leaders of each side who are spouting rhetoric, and you know, which is not intended to be news. It's intended to be inflammatory to the other side. What we're not hearing is voices from the ground, voices from the people who live in these tenements that are getting bombed, voices from people who have been there, who see what's going on. We're not hearing from those people. We're hearing from these fat squeeze bastards who are, you know, who are trying to prolong the war because each one of them wants that little strip of sand right there beside the Mediterranean Sea.
Right, and here Bob, our producer, has just sent into our production chat here the dictionary definition of Zionism. A policy for establishing and maintaining a homeland for Jews in Palestine, a movement that arose in the late 19th century. So that's your dictionary definition. Okay? So that... oh, man. I'm really trying to keep it contained in the beginning for the start of the show. One of the things that we'll do after we come back from the first break is I'm going to read the new Robert Fisk piece, because he just got back home in Lebanon when the new round of violence started. And we will actually have one of those on-the-ground reports from, you know, the greatest, in my mind, international correspondent of our day, without exception. And it's not a long piece, but he lays out what it was like for him there. And after that, we will replay the Fisk interview that Antony did a couple of months ago, because I think the combination of the two will give our listeners a little bit of that ammunition again to try and see through what's going on, because nobody in this situation is innocent, okay? I am the first one to say that, okay? But there has to be some context for who's doing what to whom, who's occupying whom.
Okay, you kind of broke up there toward the end there, my friend.
Sorry, man. Well, you know, I just want to try and rearm our listeners with that mental switch that you say you picked up about being able to see through the recording and the semantics of the recording. But we're going out to this break, Bruce. We're chatting at headonradionetwork.com, blogging at fourthestateradio.com. There's some links to the Fisk interviews and other things. And we'll be back straight after this on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweats. Great prices? No sweats. Great looks? No sweats. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
October the 10th would have been the birthday of journalist and musician Daniel Pearl, who was murdered in Pakistan. Join me and thousands of music lovers around the world carrying on his mission of connecting people through words and music. Participate in Daniel Pearl Music Day, promoting harmony for humanity. Go to danielpearlfoundation.org or call 877-9-MUSIC-9.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First, your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cent per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
All right, you're back on the Bruce, on the Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Birch and John Fox here on the Head On Radio Network, where we are creating community and a new conversation across America. Glad to have you back with us. We've been talking about the semantics of reporting with regard to Palestine and Israel and what's going on over there right now. And you know, just as a programming note, we are not in a position here on Fourth Estate Radio or on my own radio program. I really try to take a look at this from both sides. And honest to God, you know, my feeling is, John, is that, you know, that neither side, I mean, you know, hate equals hate, killing equals killing, violence equals violence, and there's no other way to look at it as far as I'm concerned. But on the Head On Radio Network, we do have a radio program called Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, where he has a very different viewpoint on the Israeli thing. And, you know, he has a certainly, and it's a valid viewpoint. If you don't like what you're hearing from us tonight on this, you know, tune in during the week from 2 to 3, and you can catch Mark Levine, who has a very interesting way of looking at this entire crisis that's going on over there right now. John, I have a question for you, though, and that is that, you know, in your estimation and with your talks and chats with Anthony Lowenstein, Frankenstein, who has done a lot of work in this area and has a very huge depth with an understanding of this situation. You know, what has been his reaction? I'm sure you've talked to him recently. What has been his reaction of what's going on right now?
Well, I've been speaking with him regularly on a daily basis this whole last week, just due to doing some preliminary work for the release of his book. And he's been sending me a lot of things, and you know, it amazes me how he can stay so level when he has such vile kind of energy and statements sent his way. And he just, I'm trying to kind of surmise it. It's just the fact that it's become almost the point of insane. And thank you, George Bush, for legitimizing the concept of a preemptive strike, because it has basically given Israel free rein to do this. Now, what I don't want to put words in Antony's mouth, but we are dealing with a situation where the conversation is completely skewed. You know, it's just absolutely skewed to the point of absurdity, right? Now, Lebanon has now been labeled as a bad guy, right? In this whole thing, like this, just suddenly, pretty much as far as I look at it, kind of out of nowhere. Now, a lot of people will take issue with me with that. But Hezbollah may be responsible for things, but the Lebanese government has no control over them. So going and bombing civilian areas in a place like Lebanon and using things like justifying blanket punishments, and this is terminology that I'm hearing. You know, this is the kind of stuff that he's hearing, that, you know, okay, the Lebanese they did kidnap two Israeli soldiers. Now, we're not sure exactly which side of the border that happened on, but where in international law are you allowed to commit war crimes like this, like bombing airports? Anyway, before we run out of time, I'm gonna at least start this bit from Fisk. This is what his most recent posting from the 14th, and it's just titled "From My Home, I Saw What the War on Terror Meant." And he says, "All night I heard the jets whispering high above the Mediterranean. It lasted for hours. Little fireflies that were watching Beirut, waiting for dawn, perhaps because it is when they descended." They came first to the little village of Dweir near Nabatea in southern Lebanon, where an Israeli plane dropped a bomb on a home of a Shia Muslim cleric. He was killed. So was his wife. So were eight of his children. One was decapitated. All they could find of a baby was its head and torso, which a younger villager brandished in fury in front of the cameras. Then the planes visited another home in Dweir and disposed of a family of seven. Now, Bob, earlier in conversation, mentioned the fact that this goes, you know, completely against any Christian tenets, and, you know, you cannot punish the son for the sins of the father. So, George W. Bush, the good Christian, backing this, you know, quietly backing this so-called retaliation, is just completely screwed. As far as I'm concerned, just completely, completely, completely screwed. Anyway, sorry, I'm having to collect myself because this really gets me worked up. And one of the things that gets me so worked up, Bruce, is the fact that the discussion is so clouded, so unbelievably clouded. It just frustrates me. Because I don't even know if I'm doing the right thing, and I'm just sick of seeing people die for no reason. So we're going to go out to this break, Bruce. Come back. We'll play the previous Fisk interview before I get into reading an excellent piece on the pairs of players in this whole situation. So we will get there when we come back. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. I'm going to try and collect myself, and we'll be back here on the Head On Radio Network.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Hey, Ranger, why do you have to remind people to be careful with fire?
Well, Mr. Mountain Lion, sometimes people need to be reminded about certain things, like not to run with scissors or let children play with wild dingoes, and to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you're saying is that people can be careless and forgetful?
Pretty much.
That makes me very sad.
Sounds like someone needs a hug.
Back off or I'll turn your hat into confetti!
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, State Forester, and the Ag Council.
Welcome back to Fourth State Radio with John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch up in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Bruce, I think we need to go straight to the phones, man. We've been Rob from New York has been holding patiently with us. Sorry about the delay there. Rob, welcome aboard Fourth State.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, of course, man. What can we do for you?
Well, I want to point out one little thing and then talk about something else. John, you kind of buy into their semantics by calling these soldiers kidnapped. They weren't kidnapped. They were captured. They're soldiers.
Well,
civilians
this
are
is
kidnapped.
True. This is true.
But it's all over the airwaves. Everybody says that they were kidnapped. They weren't. They were captured.
Right.
But there's one other aspect that I think works perfectly.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. What you guys are talking
about.
No,
please.
I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Okay. This was last week, and it was about the Palestinian conflict with Israel. And it was on NPR, which is supposed to be left-leaning and, you know, the middle of the road, depending on who you talk to. The top-of-the-hour news report really quickly went by. And the reporter said that Israelis were targeting the ministries, schools, and other military targets. Just breezed right through it. Since when are schools military targets? My God.
A school is a military target?
Yes. The way that she said it was the ministries, schools, and other military targets.
See, this is exactly it. And you're right to call me on what I said. And right there, if the constant stream of disinformation coming out has all this kind of slightly twisted semantics, it's very hard not to get caught up in it. So there I am. You know, all the it's just like, what's the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter? It's
right.
Wholly on whose side you're on.
Well, I mean, it's obvious as well with the Lebanon conflict. If Israel is targeting civilians, then what's the? That's what terrorists do, isn't it? Is it not? I mean, they target civilians.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And like one of the first targets in Lebanon was this 300 million pound brand new domestic airport.
Right.
And was one of the first things that they went for. Right. Now, who's going to end up making the money on rebuilding the thing is anybody's guess.
Albert.
but again, you know, they're bombing, you know, bits of the electrical grid. War crime.
Right.
And, you know, bombing water treatment facilities.
Exactly.
War crime. Now, I just get completely enraged with this kind of thing where one of the parts of the discussion in the last couple of days was, you know, Israel, the United States, and all this are speaking against the Palestinians more particularly against Hamas, saying that they need to stop talking about violence against Israel.
Right.
Meanwhile, Israel is committing actual violence against the Palestinians.
That's one of the things that makes me so crazy about the discussions of the war in Iraq in the Senate and in the House, is there's so much more outrage about the conversation, the framing of an issue, than there is about the issue itself. They don't really care about how people, you know, that people are dying. It's how it's discussed that really upsets
right.
people. I'm outraged by the outrage.
Well put, Rob. Well put. Because, I mean, this is, I think Bob Kincaid and I were having a conversation, one of the many we've had over the last week, where he said, you know, he thinks for himself, and similarly for me, there was a point where we just can't accept this kind of unfairness and violence against anyone. And so maybe it's because of that that some of us are able to hopefully maybe see through the semantics. And I really think that most of where everything gets derailed is semantics. And Bruce and I have been talking about this for getting close to a year now. It's all about reclaiming language, because I think you're exactly right. We're having more discussion about the discussion than actually discussing what's happening.
Yeah, and you're right. And, you know, it's people like Ann Coulter who can, you know, frame things in a way that is outrageous, and we rail against her, but we don't rail against the issue at the bottom of it. It's you know, she's successful in her way because she frames things in such an outrageous way that the discussion is about her talking, not the issue at hand. And I think that
we've just given her a bunch more free press too.
Right. But in many ways, that's the problem with all of the issues that we talk about, is that particularly, you know, and I watch, to my chagrin, I watch the cable news shows on a regular basis, and I constantly yell at them because we're talking about it. We're not talking about the issue.
Right.
And who can
Absolutely.
Frame it better?
And we need. Yes, and we need to get talking about the issues. And this is, again, one of those things that really, really frustrates me is, you know, where Israel as a government seems to be able to get away with firing high-powered weapons at children throwing rocks from the other side. And this is considered fair.
Unbelievable. That's been one of the issues that really came home to me, I mean, a number of years ago, was that, you know, these are kids throwing rocks at police and you'll be able to blow them away? And this
Absolutely. I do not understand how you can justify that. And I'm going to get into it a little bit later. There's another piece out of Salon that I'm going to read later where the last 40 years of Middle Eastern policy globally has done nothing but make those young rock throwers into militants when they grow up.
Absolutely.
Because this policy has done nothing but feed the hatred and mistrust
in
the region. And I'm just... it's a crater collection. Yes, you're right, Bob. And this is supposed to be a theocracy, okay? And so you think that these people should be working in some sort of a higher standard, but yet they use this as a way to cover their arse as they commit some of the worst atrocities with kind of, you know, open credit card to do so. And we have to pull this conversation back some way, somehow. And I really do believe that I don't know how long you've been listening to us or the network, but this friend of mine, Anthony Lowenstein, here in Sydney, has an absolute bruiser of a book coming out in the beginning of August called My Israel Question. And he is a young Jewish Australian who truly believes that the Palestinians have as much right to security, to, you know, their own land, as the Israelis do. And he gets absolutely trashed by the Zionist blogs, by the very, very, very right-wing-ish pundits, there have been amazing accusations made about him, and it's purely because he does not fall for the semantics. And he sees through it. And he does not, because of his faith, he does not, by default, back the actions of the theocracy.
Right.
And he's about to really, really blow the doors off this thing, and I reckon he's going to become a major player in this discussion, and I hope he will be able to open the discussion up to places where it needs to go. And so if this is a subject that gets you, keep an eye out, and believe me, we will be having him on once the book is out, My Israel Question. And I've read little bits when I've been given a chance to sneak a peek, and I'm telling you, I have not known anybody aside from Fisk who can cut through this in such a way. And all he does is get labeled as a self-hating Jew.
Well, I look forward to it. There's one article that was written. It was by Paul Craig Roberts. He's a former assistant secretary for the Treasury for Ronald Reagan. And he wrote the article, High Price of American Gullibility. And he talked a lot about the semantics of it and the way that the questions are framed. You're either with us or against us. So it's the blind, unquestioning response from the people determined to wear their patriotism on their sleeves. And that sort of sloganeerism that really appeals to the base emotions within us. And that's on rent.com. It's called The High Price of American Gullibility. And I think people should read that. And, you know, and definitely the book, The Israeli Question, I'm looking forward to.
That sounds great, and if you have a chance, email me a link to that at jon@fourthestateradio.com. I'd love to make sure that I catch that, and you know, I really hope that we can get this conversation opened up, because I really think we are pushing the flashpoint globally at the moment more than we have in a couple of decades, because. You put Iraq, you have, you know, North Korea, who's flexing its muscle because they've figured out if you show that you have possible weapons capability, you don't get invaded. So, you know, old Kim might be a nutter, but he's not stupid. And now you have Israel doing some really, really, really ridiculous things as far as I can see. And yeah, Bob, you probably are right, man. This is as bad as it's been since the 1100s.
I think.
And I'll take Bob's word on that, because he's got a pretty good grasp when it comes to this. And not only that, he's got a really good friend, Eugene, who is amazing when it comes to history. But, you know, we really need to find a way to get the zealots out on all sides, because again, this also not only comes down to controlling the conversation, but it also comes down to fundamentalist religion.
Of course, part of the problem with that is the zealots work harder than anybody else. You know, if you're a zealot, you're crazed and working your tail off to get your slogans out there, and other people just kind of buy into them.
Yeah. Were you trying to break in with something else before there?
That's all
Rob?
Right. No, I was just talking. Okay. Zealots work harder than anybody else. That's why they.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's why they're zealot. You know, I guess that hence the term. You know, they're just that is what they are about.
Right.
You know, as opposed to what we are about is about trying to get the dialogue opened up. They are about controlling that dialogue. And making sure that their bias gets through come hell or high water.
Right.
And that is no way to come up with a solution.
Well, I appreciate the time, John.
Rob, thank you so much, man, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
I'll be back.
All right, man, take care. And that was Rob ringing in from New York. And Bruce, some good points there, man.
Yeah, I think so. I think some very excellent points, very excellent points. I think we need to go do our break, my friend, so...
Right.
Yeah. So you've been listening to Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Birch and John Fox. And if you want to get in on the show, you too can avail yourself of that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? This evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've got to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up his house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. Yes, 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 we could use a few karma chameleons on this planet at the moment. Bruce Birch, you still over there on the other side of the planet?
Aye, matey.
All right, man. Well, you know what? We have one of the members of the Horn on the line at the moment, the man who is in the midst of moving, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio, buddy.
Hey, guys.
Are you up north yet? Have you left? What's going
Chicago.
On?
I am in Chicago.
Right on.
City.
So when And these people utilize that false construct to make others less than human, just like you're saying. You know, it's just that I think you've nailed it on the head there, Joe.
Well,
this goes throughout history.
I mean, it goes throughout history.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite thing to talk about is what happened in Athens 2,500 years ago, because basically the same thing happened. And you get to a point where you just realize that, and really this boils down to the essence of what conservatism is. Never mind what conservatives say conservatism is. What conservatism really is the least number of people getting the most amount of money and power. And whenever that happens, you get a large number of people dying so that a few at the very top can either get more power or live in more luxury. And that's the essence of what's going on in this country and throughout the world. You have basic and all of our foreign policy, and they really don't care what happens to us in the middle class. They don't care what happens to, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, however many have been killed, you know, from Afghanistan and sent them to Cuba and wherever, all the secret places. They just don't care. And the Athenians felt that way before that. And then the Holy Roman Empire, they felt that way towards whoever they were subjugating. It's a human nature thing that none of the problems that we currently have are going to be solved until we can address that whole tribal issue, because that's really what it comes down to. There's the rich tribe, the motor of the world, whoever you want to call them, the ones that supposedly make everything work, and they believe that they have the right to rule over all of us.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have any of those riches if it weren't for the rest of the population doing their labor and their slavery for them.
Well, the rest of the population does their labor and their slavery because that's the only way they get to eat sometimes. I mean, you know, it's like the immigration debate. All these people, you know, screaming bloody murder about these Mexicans this, these Mexicans that. And the truth of the matter is that the Mexicans are only doing what anybody else would do under their situation, trying to make a better life for themselves. They're not the ones that set policy, just like the Iraqis are not the ones who set policy for Saddam Hussein. And, right. You know, whoever is running the situation in the Palestinian Authority or even among the Israelis don't necessarily represent what their government is doing. But they're the ones who wind up paying for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the machine running, you know, and you know, it's too bad that you can't, that you're, you know, you're not, sorry, I've something funny in our production chat, but as you know, that how that can happen. But I just really am worried about what's kind of getting ready to possibly happen. And if you check out the show post for today, Joe, there's a Salon story there that I think you would find very, very interesting, which when we come back after the next break, I'm actually going to read some of, because it sets up kind of the four pairs of players in this thing, and it's really, really kind of interesting. And it lays it out very, very well that there are four pairs of players who have all very, very different interests that have maintained this area, keeping it very, very violent and hot for many decades.
Right.
You know,
well, I think
and
if there is a supreme being, he has a real sense of practical jokes to put the most important resource we have in that spot. You know. You know.
Well,
what I mean?
You know.
It's the old joke.
Yeah,
how did Al Royal get on their land? You know, and
somebody else, I think.
It was Digby or Bilmon made the point that the United States is kind of like Trantor from Isaac Asimov's Foundation novels, and Trantor was the capital of the galaxy in his galactic empire, and basically near the end of their empire, all they were reduced to doing were defending the five worlds that were nearest them that supplied all their food to make sure their supply lines didn't get cut. And that's basically what America and whatever Western powers who need that oil to run their civilizations are doing in the Middle East. They have to control that oil, because, you know, America was built on cheap oil. We could not have built America
Absolutely.
The way we have if we didn't have easy oil. And we're not going to run out. Don't let anybody. I want to get onto this. I know it's kind of a side thing. I don't want to let anybody.
Okay, Joe, I got to cut you off. We're up on the top of the hour.
Okay.
We'll pick this up another time, and we'll speak to you soon.
Okay.
You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. News is next. Great bumper tune. We'll be back.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me.
The ship suffered serious damage and is now headed back to Israel. There were no immediate reports of casualties, but Al Jazeera reports that four sailors are missing. Meanwhile, Israel continues its offensive in Lebanon, targeting its airport and main roads in a bid to disable its infrastructure. The head of Hezbollah issued a statement saying members are ready for war with Israel following the destruction of Hezbollah's headquarters in Lebanon. In Gaza City, Israel struck the Palestinian Economic Ministry offices. Earlier, gunmen blew open a 20-foot hole in the Egypt-Gaza border wall, allowing dozens of stranded Palestinians into Gaza City. In Russia, President Bush refused to pressure Israel to stop its attacks in both Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, as the Lebanese prime minister and the Palestinian president have urged him to do. But he did say he would urge Israel to spare civilians from harm and acknowledge that the attacks could dismantle the Lebanese government. In Southern California, two wildfires have now merged and now cover more than 95 square miles. Officials report more than 100 buildings, including homes, have already been destroyed. Later today, to discuss a deal struck with China, which had vowed to veto a Japanese-drafted resolution. It called for sanctions over the North's recent missile launches. In Iraq today, 12 attacks in and around Baghdad. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is expected to make his first visit to Washington later this month. In Russia today, President Bush met with democracy activists who expressed concerns over civil liberties violations in the country. Mr. Bush said he would relay those concerns to Russian President Vladimir Putin during tomorrow's meeting. In Washington, CIA officer Valerie Plame and her husband have set up a website. It seeks donations to help defray the cost of a lawsuit they filed yesterday against several Bush administration officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney. In Nebraska, an appeals court has reinstated a voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage. And in Tennessee, the state Supreme Court ruled that voters should be given a say on the issue. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Japan's central bank raised interest rates today for the first time in 6 years. The Bank of Japan raised the rate from 0 to 0.25 percentage point. The Commerce Department reports that retail sales were down 0.1% last month. One economist blames high gasoline prices, which he says are causing consumers to spend less. The chief executives of GM and Renault Nissan are scheduled to meet late today in Detroit. The head of Nissan has reportedly already stated that he does not want to chair the alliance if it comes to pass. Three British bankers have pleaded not guilty on Enron-related fraud charges. The men arrived in Houston this week after being extradited from London. FedEx has been subpoenaed on possible antitrust violations by airlines. The Department of Justice is investigating whether the air cargo transportation industry has engaged in price fixing. At least 34 state attorney generals plan to sue 7 computer memory chip makers. The companies are accused of overcharging their customers from 1998 to 2002. Today, computer security company McAfee announced that it fixed a potentially devastating problem in its antivirus technology. Still, many businesses and government agencies are upset because they were not told of the flaw until today. Light sweet crude settled at $77.03 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 107 points, NASDAQ down 17, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
John on 1-877-4 head on. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
All right, here. You're back on Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Birch and the amazing Aussie, or expat from America, John the Bone Crusher Fox. John, are you still with me down there on the down under?
Of course I do. Of course I am. I'm here. I'm always here. This has been kind of the first hour went flying by, and it was good to hear from Joe. Good to hear at least he's made it up there. Hopefully by next week he'll have his gear so he can get back on and do a live show again, because I know he's got to be getting frustrated without getting in front of the microphone for this many weeks in a row. I would.
Yeah, no doubt. You know what? I guess what was, you know, just sort of the thing that seems to be, there's a common thread here, I think. And I think the common thread, is, I'll tell you what. Let's let our friend David from somewhere near Nashville, Tennessee. Come on, I think he wants to give us some dot connecting. David, are you there?
Oh, I'm very much here, and you guys are absolutely there, and you're there in the greatest sort of way, and in the perfect sort of spot. I'm enjoying the show. You guys are great. I really enjoy what you're doing. Thank you for thank you for putting the time in to make a show for it.
That's very kind. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, the kindness is over. Now I'm going to get on you.
Well, please do. Please do. This ain't no echo chamber, buddy.
I'm sorry?
I said this ain't no echo chamber.
No, it's not. Did I hear correctly a little earlier that there was a concern that George W., the chimp in charge, had taught the world about the preemptive strike, that he'd given the Israeli government the encouragement to do that sort of thing? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, what I was putting across was by what George Bush did, it has done in Iraq, has set precedence
in our modern time. There's the fork in the road. There's the fork in the road. Starting with the advent of the 20th century, the United States wanted to establish that we weren't like those other guys. We were going to act like mothers of that era did. Son, start no fight, but finish anyone that comes your way. We wanted to prove that we were above it all. We wanted to prove that we were more than just this little nation. We wanted to be bigger. We were on a higher plane, so we stressed and we said over and over and over, we only use our military might when we're forced into it and when we are attacked. There must have been a thousand barrels of newspaper ink spilled to remind the world that we weren't like the Nazis going into Poland. We weren't like the Japanese that attacked us. Now, it's not that as the years rolled on and we got into the 60s, it wasn't like we wouldn't trump up something like the Gulf of Tonkin resolution to give us an excuse. It wasn't that we were all that nice, but we would always give the world some sort of reason. And very honestly, it's my reading of history that the Israelis, with things like their Air Force attack on purported Iranian nuclear capability and a preemptive strike of the finest, most obvious order, gave the neocons, you know, the burr under the saddle. Why don't we do that? We, you know, to hell with this business of you've got to attack us. If we think you are wrong, we'll do it. We picked it up. We were encouraged. There's so much of our current military and intelligence gathering and torturing that has come from the modern last 15 to 20 times to engage anybody to for you. You know, they don't want to talk about it. They think they've pulled the lever once every 4 years and they've done what they ought to do. They don't want to be bothered in between.
Block them.
I don't know if you can hear that. Bob's running little samples of George W. Bush saying, pluck them.
Hey, George, what do you think, George? What do you think about all those? What do you think about all those Israeli children being killed, George?
Pluck them.
We know what he really means.
Israeli conflict, whether it's called Palestinian, whatever, they've been arguing and killing and fighting over that same batch of sand for 1,500 years minimum. And the idea that he thinks he's going to step in and he's going to be the guy that solves it, he's going to be the guy that stops it, he thinks he's going to cause a, you know, call a news conference and stumblingly say, well, that's because Hezbollah, well, they kidnapped two guys and there's rockets. It's all their fault.
Well, you know, the situation is his definite lack of reaction is that he has been very calculated in not saying what something's right, except for you know, in the very beginning, coming down on the side of Israel for sure.
And that hideous, horrible, ugly, deceptive, and lying, just flat out lying phrase, Israel deserves to defend herself. Oh, help me understand that one.
I want the same explanation too, David. That just completely goes by me. How you can even say it in that
on
way.
On some continent, it's
they have
quarter
right
after or a quarter before or bottom of. You know, I'm on the verge of beating up a break, so gee whiz, guys, I gotta get off here and leave room for the real callers.
Are most definitely a real caller.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and gentlemen, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matty. We will talk to you very, very soon. And I guess we are going out to that break. And when we come back, we are going to revisit Robert Fisk, Bruce. I think it's time. And then I want to get into the Salon thing, this great article called The Mideast Death Dance, which I think lays out some of the chessboard very, very well. So we're going to go and take a quick break here. Chat room, and I do believe old Ben Birch is still running his fundraiser, so stop by and drop him a dime. So you're listening to Bruce Birch and John Fox, Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store?
Workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Head on RadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Bruce Burke's radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about those girls. It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's worst bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Burch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio with Bruce Burch and John Fox, and we're just having one hell of a time here tonight. I'll tell you, it's been rocking and rolling all through the radio program this evening. John, I think we wanted to go ahead and do we have time to run the Fisk audio at this point? Or do we need to do it later on?
Well, if we need to stop it before going to the break, we will, and we'll pick it up after the break, because I really think before we get into any more information, Anthony Lowenstein interviewing Robert Fisk after his lecture here in Sydney, and this is just 13 minutes of great stuff. Roll it. Thing on the semantics of reporting.
This is an interview with Robert Fisk in Sydney on March the 10th, 2006. Robert, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Let me ask you first a very brief question. You've often been very critical of Western journalists, particularly in the US.
Well, I think the historical background does actually go back to the McCarthy era. You know, the Edward Murrow era, that wonderful film, you know, Good Night and Good Luck. You should see it. I think it goes back to there. I think there's always been in America this feeling that to be a journalist and question your country's foreign policy, especially in time of war, which means always, according to George W. Bush, is somehow unpatriotic and thus potentially subversive. Mm. And add to that the enormous pressures, which do exist for US American journalists, well, as they do for all of us, but more the Americans, yeah, from those supporters of Israel in the major lobby groups in the United States, like AIPAC. Mm. And what has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighbourhood a colony, you'll be criticised and called potentially anti-Semitic. Mm. If you start talking about the wall as opposed to the fence or the security barrier, the same thing can happen. When you start telling the truth that Israeli soldiers can be very brutal, as well as Palestinian suicide bombers, you will be accused of being anti-Semitic. Or the editor will be bombarded with letters from outraged readers all of whom are supporters of Israel, asking why they, he's employing an anti-Semite, blah, 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 frightens some reporters. And it frightens them not only because they want to say they're not. I mean, I threaten to sue people who say that to me. I attack them. But not only because they don't want to hear it said, but they don't want their editors to feel, well, there must be something wrong with so-and-so out in Jerusalem. I mean, the things he's writing, he's upsetting a lot of people, right? And then, of course, all that comes from that is that you have a visit from a delegation of supporters of Israel and the ambassador complains. And so in the United States, where this sort of thing is particularly... I mean, if we have a campaign mounted against me by a particular group, we simply ignore them. We're not into campaigns. Individual readers can write what they think, mm-hmm. but we don't take campaigns. I mean, I had one from supporters of Israel, and we got letters in from places like Texas. I will never buy your magazine again. Well, unfortunately, we're not on sale in Texas. I wish we were, and we're certainly not a magazine. Mm-hmm. But these are people who've obviously been told to write, told to create a campaign of scurrilous innuendo, and my editor just puts it in the bin. We're just not interested.
Do you find this loss of nerve is increasingly happening in the UK as well? Or do you think it's particularly...
No, I don't think so particularly. European reporting on the Middle East is infinitely more comprehensive and comprehensible than American reporting. I mean, the problem now is that there's so many weasel words introduced into American journalism on the Middle East that it's incomprehensible. I mean, if I'm in New York and I buy the New York Times, I simply don't know what's happening in Gaza, Palestine, Israel, Iraq, for that matter. I mean, you know, every time the Americans said that the insurgents were dead-enders or Saddam remnants, which they clearly weren't, the name has popped up in, and now I notice Taliban remnants has popped up in the papers. You know, reporters who normally say, oh, we can't put any point of view and we've got to have a quote, are actually using the words of government and are putting a government point of view in. But that apparently is okay because American officials say has now become the rubric for confirming anything that they want to put in the paper.
Since you've been in Australia, you've been here twice now. I presume you've read some of the papers and
I've been reading the papers.
Got a bit of a sense. Do you get a similar sense that the media is having the same troubles here than they would be, say, in the US or the UK? What's your sense of the media here?
Well, I haven't been coming to Australia frequently enough to be able to see the changes and the transitions within the press. I mean, at the moment, you're obviously obsessed with the Australian Wheat Board, and I can well see why, and indeed I'm becoming obsessed with it to the point I might be writing about it for my own paper very soon. Mm. I think the point is that, if you look at your general reporting out of the Middle East, a lot of it is agency wire copy, and it suffers from, it's this Associated Press, it suffers from the same problem as the American journalism does. I mean, it obviously makes a difference on a community how they read and what they read. A good example is in, another Commonwealth countries in Canada. If you talk to English-speaking Canadians about the Middle East, they tend to have not a very clear and sharp idea of the actual issues and the injustices, for example, that have been visited upon the Palestinians. If you talk to French Canadians, he said, well, the fact of the matter is, there should have been an editorial in one of your papers saying, hang on a minute, this guy Brickett Simon is talking through the bottom of his what's it? It's ridiculous. And anyone who's been to Iraq, I mean, Brigadier Simon has to fly around by helicopter. Why doesn't he drive? Because he'd be killed in an ambush, that's why. Mm. I don't blame him, but don't tell us it's getting better.
You were talking before about Iraq and how it's becoming increasingly dangerous to travel there, to work there, including for yourself. What's the natural likelihood then of where does the situation go if it becomes too dangerous for someone like you to go, or Patrick Cope and other people to go? What's the inevitable situation then? How do we find out what goes on there if we aren't hearing it from journalists who are actually on the ground there?
We'll keep going. There are ways in. We'll keep going.
So your feeling is that despite the dangers, it would take a lot for you not to go, personally?
Yeah, I mean, this is part of my story. I mean, I have never let any part of the Middle East, however dangerous, be outside my ability to go there. I mean, I wouldn't, even in Beirut at the height of the kidnappings, where my friend Terry Anderson was held for almost 7 years, I was still reporting from Beirut. I went into Algeria when hardly any other reporters would go there, when reporters who did go there were having their throats cut. And I went on reporting, and I travelled on for... No, you've got to keep going. I'm not going to allow Iraq to slip away from the Middle East correspondent of The Independent. I won't let that happen. The Americans might not want to go there. The NGOs might be pulled out. The UN isn't there, and the Red Cross may go. But The Independent will maintain a presence there. I will continue to go because it's my territory, and that's my decision.
And your paper clearly, at this stage, obviously supports what you're doing, and obviously they do support you. But is it
The situation of my paper is that as Middle East correspondent, it is my duty to decide whether I go to Iraq. And my editor's view is quite simple. If I say I'm going, then he backs me.
Okay.
And that's a brave thing to do, because if I got kidnapped, it'll be, I don't understand, you know, why you ever let Robert go. He'd have to take a lot of flack. But he's prepared to, and I'm grateful to that. This is the same guy who prints what I write and doesn't change it, so of course I would expect him to do the same. But, you know, I always let him know how grateful I am to him for having his trust in me. One of the important things, you know, reporters always want to sort of say, well, I have the right to blah, blah, blah. You need strong and tough editors, and you should make friends with editors as a journalist. I do. I always make sure my editor is my friend. I bring him out to the Middle East, and I show him, like, this is what's happening. And, well, I've been there long enough for my editor to know that I, you know, by and large, I get it right. When I get it wrong, you'll see me on the video screen asking Tony Blair to withdraw British troops from Iraq.
Where do you see yourself in 20 years? Doing the same thing from the same country, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I'll be almost 70 years old in 20 years' time.
Plenty of time? You're still young?
Yeah. I don't think at the age of 70 I'm going to want to jump in the car and race to southern Lebanon every time a shell bursts. But, you know, I tell you, with reporting, some journalists can go on right up to 70 or 80 writing beautifully. Others, and I won't name them because I can think of them and it's sad because most of them are dead now anyway, there comes a moment when their writing can decline. When it's not because they get burned out, it's not because they became senile, it's just that they've reached the top of their capabilities. And rather than, you know, skate along on the same surface, there is bound to be a diminution. The story becomes the same. We've done this before. You get tired. And I don't want to be in a situation where one day people say, well, Bob Fiske, he used to write very well, didn't he? You know? So I'd like to avoid that. I'd like to make sure that when I'm at the top of my powers and I'm happy and I think I've done as much as I can, maybe I would do something completely different. I mean, screenplay writing for movies.
You said before you're interested in making a film, which is based on something presumably...
I'm very interested in films and the film world, and I go to film festivals, and I'm fascinated by movies and how the enormous, unstoppable power to convince a good film can have, with a political power that you simply can't get in a newspaper article, and not even in a television documentary. I'm not so keen on docs. I'm more interested in feature films. I mean, there's a whole new series of... I mean, Hollywood is crossing the road a bit on the Middle East now. Syriana.
Have you seen Syriana?
Oh, yes, I saw it in the States. And actually, I saw Munich, or Munich, and I thought that was a brilliant film because it took us somewhere we haven't been before. It was a major Hollywood epic, Spielberg, of course, which said that Israel's militarism doesn't work, that could actually be a murderous organization that tries to kill its own agents. Now, that's quite a way across the other side of the road. Absolutely. That we've ever been before. Now, other movies, Syriana, yeah, but not a single Arab mentions Israel. In real life, they all would, right? So, Uncle George stayed away, George Clooney stayed away from the Israel. And the same thing happened, remember, in Fahrenheit, 9/11, not a single mention of Israel. Right. It was actually anti-Saudi as well as anti-Bush. It wasn't in any way saying, I mean, of course, I know the Israelis had nothing to do with 9/11, but it didn't sort of say, well, hold on, one of the issues in the Middle East is Israel. He didn't want to touch it. So, but of course, it probably needed a Spielberg to go head on at that. And I know there are, you know, things in the film which aren't accurate, et cetera, et cetera. There are other things that are. But in a feature film, you won't get, you know, word-perfect fingerprint accuracy. If you want that, you go into documentaries.
Absolutely. Robert, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome, Anthony.
Thank you.
Take care.
And I just think that that's a brilliant thing to revisit, Bruce. You know, he just lays things out with such clarity. And as, you know, our producer Bob popped up in the chat, said, you know, did you catch that? He's not even 50 yet. And he's done all this brilliant run. He's won more awards than... yeah, Robert Fiske, the guy we were just listening to, who's won more awards than like, any other journalist. Yeah. That.
Well, you know, and we have a situation in this nation. The newsrooms are no longer beholden to an independent editor who is going to fact check and look at real life stuff and report, you know, evil because it's evil, or murder because it's murder, or death because it's death, and call it what it is and use neutral terms. What we have is a media now that is, and what I find to be repugnant about this idea and completely, false and dishonest. You know, we want to talk about dishonesty, right? Is the idea that anything that is presented, I think Joe even said it, is that anything that is presented as news on the networks is presented as news. Ability, like Brian, what the hell is his name? Brian, a religious listener to Rush Limbaugh, self-admitted.
Pluck him.
Pluck him. 3 hours a day, you know, this guy listens to Rush Limbaugh, and we're expected to, that's 3 out of 24 hours that he's not got real news being pumped into his head. 3 hours a day that he's got complete blather being pumped into his head, and yet he comes to the fore every evening as an authority on what is going on in the world. So if we want to talk about the semantics of reporting, not only do we need to talk about the fact that the media is a corporate media, not necessarily that of truth-seeking media. It's more of a let's make sure that we present the stories and do it in such a way that we don't piss off anybody who's given us money. You know,
well,
I mean,
and I fall in the thing of, well, you know what? If you're up to badness and we call it out, too bad. That is what you get for doing these things, for lying or misrepresenting, you know. And so it doesn't, you know. This is where, and Bob Kincaid and I have actually come on slightly different sides of this.
To create the state of Israel, or Israel as it was, if it was yet to be an annexed thing or whatever, was, you know, I think a valid thing, but it was it's the way it was done, and the worst thing that ever happened, and that was when it changed. Gone from bad to worse, and I'm afraid over the ages, if you like, over all of my lifetime of interfering, trying to engineer things in, everything is coming home to roost all at once, all over the world, in South America, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's something that we're basically going to have to sit back and watch. What happens, and I can't see a lot of hope, because you mentioned the Salon article, which I'd read, and a lot of the players, as they put it, you know, that are involved. At the moment, America is powerless in this situation as well. They can't call back Israel, because the other side won't stop. And they're on this vicious circle that they just cannot get out of, and it's going to persist until something bad happens and the world stands up and says enough. It's going to be messy. It's going to be cruel. It's going to be horrific. But I really can't see any other conclusion that can be reached logically.
Sue, I'm there with you, and I. Bam, all these news stories were coming down the wire, and it looked damn scary to me. I mean, I was reading this stuff and thinking, is this the end of the world that I'm reading and reporting on air, you know?
No, well, you want to go on and check out the Rapture lot, because they're convinced.
I know it. They're dancing in the aisles, handling their snakes and whatever it is that they do. But, you know, I guess what really kind of, you know, we were talking about hope. I heard you mention hope a minute ago.
Yeah.
And my hope with this, I mean, I don't want to see bloodshed, and I don't want to see, you know, some sort of crazy world revolution where, you know, where there's this huge cataclysmic conflict. But I also think that those people who have pushed their way to the fore of power need to be pushed back, you know.
Absolutely.
And And if it needs to be in a, and if it, you know, one can only hope that it's in a velvet revolution, as my friend Peter Werby likes to say, you know, a revolution of ideas, where what happens is, you know, the people rise up and they say, and through a war of words, they say, you know, no, we reject this philosophy, we reject this first strike, you know, method of doing war. Of, well, those people shook their fist at us, so therefore we need to drop a 550-pound bomb on them. You know, but it may not, Sue. It may not be a revolution of ideas that creates the, you know, that change. It may end up being something much more extreme than that. Now, my hope is that we can do that. That we're starting to do that here. My hope is that through Head On Radio Network, through this program, through people like you calling in and taking an interest in wanting to change the world, that we can begin that process. Because I firmly also believe that putting positive energy toward a solution pushes that solution further and further along, whether or not we realize it in our time or not. That's the hope. The hope is that you still care. The hope is I still care, that John still cares, and that we're able to take this sort of, you know, sounds very new agey at this point, but take all this energy and put it toward a positive solution. And I think we're working on that.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I don't consider that there is no hope, and there is always a possibility that something, you know, can come about in a peaceful way. Unfortunately, I don't think that will be the case between Israel and the rest of the Middle East. That is a situation. It's a festering sore. You know, it is a festering sore on humanity, what's been going on there. It's hard for the people concerned to accept, but I do know there's hope, because it's very similar to the situation that we had in Ireland. But it's only because the present government that we have, I mean, this was in the early days, that they sat down and they actually came to the table and talked with the people concerned, because previous governments as far back since it first started lost, you know, wouldn't talk. I have to go, Bruce. My battery is dying.
Okay. Well, Sue, thank you so much for joining us, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective with us.
Well, keep up the good work, because I really love listening.
All right, we will
thank
do that.
Thank you so much, Sue. All right, Bruce. I think on that note, we should.
I was going to
go ahead.
We need to go to our break, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877. All right. We'll be right back.
Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world since its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up and not speak. Grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High fire in a fire river. Should have seven games in a government for hire in a combat site. Let the weapon come in a hurry with the fury screaming down your neck. Keep my team reporters travel. Trump, Kevin Cross. Look at that. No plane. Fine. Dead. Uh-oh. Overflow. Population common.
Back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told.
You all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. Very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I have to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready?
But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
No way.
You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not.
Ready.
Hi. My name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. Our producer Bob is just having a jingly jangly time there with the bumper music today. It's fantastic. It's great.
How rocking was that?
Well, that was fantastic. You know, I before we get going though, I did want to like remind everyone, if you want to get in on the show tonight, it's been a hot night for phone calls, but this is a topic we need to look at it. We need to realize what's going on. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, Head On. Now, you can also send us email to either John or myself. You can send it to John, that's J-O-N at fourthestateradio.com, J-O-N at fourthestateradio.com. You can also send it to me, Bruce, at fourthestateradio.com as well. Now, John, I wanted to ask you something about this. Now, this is just slightly off the main topic tonight, but tell me what was going through your mind Thursday when you saw all this stuff happening. I mean, just give me a snapshot of what you were thinking.
Flashpoint. I mean, like I really feel as though we're like the pressure is just building up to a point. So now you have from all sides a whole bunch of poking the beast, whoever the beast may be. And I'm not sure, you know, how much of it's out of just sheer frustration or what, but you put on our you know, bad concept in going into Iraq. You add into then Iran having to make noise to try and avoid them being invaded, as is North Korea. And now Israel, Lebanon, and Palestine, I just think it has, you know, pushed the whole thing up a level to where I kind of, there's part of me that kind of agrees with Sue, our last caller, just the fact that, you know, how much effect can we have to try and pull this thing back? But we can't give up. We just can't say, you know, throw our hands up in the air and stop putting it across. And I'm not saying that was anything that Sue was saying she was doing. It's just, yeah, again, this is so huge. And it's so, I don't know, painful and volatile that I'm really worried. I'm really worried this time that it's just going to completely go off the rails if some intervention doesn't come into it. I'm very, very, very worried.
Well,
angry just at the reporting of it, the way that it's reported, where Israel is faultless and everyone else is to blame. And there's where my frustration just absolutely gets me manic.
Well, we don't want that, John. We don't need you manic. We need you. We need you. We need you relax, baby. Relax. Take a deep breath. Peach in. Green out.
Yeah. Oh, I
peach
know.
In. Green
yes.
out.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm working on the flow, buddy. Well, and this is going to be a really short segment due to the Fisk audio and all that and great calls. We kind of have run this half hour out really quickly. Now, we're going to go out and go to the news and whatnot. We can come back and do some more on Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, but the phone lines are open, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, if you've got something else you'd like to talk about or throw something about this conversation in. Please, please, please call in. Drop us an email. I'm ready to open up the doors to more subjects, but I'm also willing to stay on this one, Bruce. So we'll go out to the news. This is Bruce Birch and John Fox on Fourth Estate Radio, and we will be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. Off the coast of Beirut today, an Israeli warship was hit by an unmanned aircraft rigged with explosives. Israeli officials report that the ship suffered serious damage and is now headed back to Israel. There were no immediate reports of casualties, but Al Jazeera reports that four sailors are missing. Meanwhile, Israel continues its offensive in Lebanon, targeting its airport and main roads in a bid to disable its infrastructure. The head of Hezbollah issued a statement saying members are ready for war with Israel following the destruction of Hezbollah's headquarters in Lebanon. In Gaza City, Israel struck the Palestinian Economic Ministry offices. Earlier, gunmen blew open a 20-foot hole in the Egypt-Gaza border wall, allowing dozens of stranded Palestinians into Gaza City. In Russia, President Bush refused to pressure Israel to stop its attacks in both Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, as the Lebanese prime minister and the Palestinian president have urged him to do. But he did say he would urge Israel to spare civilians from harm and acknowledge that the attacks could dismantle the Lebanese government. In Southern California, two wildfires have now merged and now cover more than 95 square miles. Officials report more than 100 buildings, including homes, have already been destroyed. At the United Nations, Security Council members expect to vote on a resolution against North Korea tomorrow. They'll meet later today to discuss a deal struck with China, which had vowed to veto a Japanese-drafted resolution. It called for sanctions over the North's recent missile launches. In Iraq today, 12 Iraqi soldiers were ambushed and killed at an army checkpoint, and at least 14 people died in sectarian attacks in and around Baghdad. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is expected to make his first visit to Washington later this month. In Russia today, President Bush met with democracy activists who expressed concerns over civil liberties violations in the country. Mr. Bush said he would relay those concerns to Russian President Vladimir Putin during tomorrow's meeting. In Washington, CIA officer Valerie Plame and her husband have set up a website. It seeks donations to help defray the cost of a lawsuit they filed yesterday against several Bush administration officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney. In Nebraska, an appeals court has reinstated a voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage. And in Tennessee, the state Supreme Court ruled that voters should be given a say on the issue. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Japan's central bank raised interest rates today for the first time in 6 years. The Bank of Japan raised the rate from 0.25 percentage point. The Commerce Department reports that retail sales were down 0.1% last month. One economist blames high gasoline prices, which he says are causing consumers to spend less. The chief executives of GM and Renault Nissan are scheduled to meet late today in Detroit. The head of Nissan has reportedly already stated that he does not want to chair the alliance if it comes to pass. Three British bankers have pleaded not guilty on Enron-related fraud charges. The men arrived in Houston this week after being extradited from London. FedEx has been subpoenaed on possible antitrust violations by airlines. The Department of Justice is investigating whether the air cargo transportation industry has engaged in price fixing. At least 34 state attorney generals plan to sue 7 computer memory chip makers. The companies are accused of overcharging their customers from 1998 to 2002. Today, computer security company McAfee announced that it fixed a potentially devastating problem in its antivirus technology. Still, many businesses and government agencies are upset because they were not told of the flaw until today. Light sweet crude settled at $77.03 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 107 points, NASDAQ down 17, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together.
now the final hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4 Head On. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
The city's changing,
everybody. We're all changing. It's the truth. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, everybody. It's the Big Hour 3. My buddy Bruce Birch is over on the Northern Hemisphere. You still there, mate?
Arf, arf.
Arf, arf. And we have great friend of the show, wonderful friend of the network, on the line. Luke from Knox Vegas is on the line. No sense in waiting. How you going, Luke?
I'm fine. How y'all doing?
Doing wonderful. Doing wonderful.
Well, I heard y'all were talking about this thing, the Israel and the Hezbollah and Lebanon and all this. I normally try not to stay away from this subject. You know what I mean? Because it's one of the ones you ain't going to get out of any which way you look at it. But the thing that amazes me right now is if you watch our media right now, you've got to really watch it carefully and read and do some other stuff, because I've been sitting here watching this the last couple of days, and it's amazing the stuff they're leaving out when you go from channel to channel. This thing yesterday where they had the naval ship that got hit, one channel wasn't even bothered to tell you, oh, by the way, this is the same boat that had just blown up Hezbollah headquarters. That, oh, by the way, maybe that's why it got hit. Was essentially because they blew up like the leader of Hezbollah's house, or one of the directors of Hezbollah, blew up his house and then blew up his offices. And then that's the one, you know, essentially he got on the, apparently was at a safe house and said, you want to bring it. And he says, you know, essentially said, here it comes. Said, you know, watch the ship in the harbor, and a few minutes later, boom. But if you watch certain channels, they weren't telling you that. It's just, oh, Hezbollah blew up a ship in the harbor. You know what I mean? Some of them are leaving out little pieces of this, you know, that put things into context.
Absolutely. And you know what this reminds me of, Luke? It reminds me of grade school, okay? And the example that I can use is, When I was a young kid before my teenage years, I was a bit of an overweight child, shall we say. And so in the ultra conservative area that I grew up in, not only did I come from a divorced family, which meant I was damaged, I was also overweight, which ended up leading to me being gang beaten on a weekly basis. And what I found interesting is the one time that I picked something up and strike back and hit one of them, I was the one who was suspended for violence.
Well, you know, it's like what the story that I don't think is getting reported is, you know, they're talking about, well, they took this one soldier captive, you know, and that supposedly started it. Well, they don't bother reminding people that the week before, Israel had had artillery shelled a beach and killed, I think, two or three people on the beach, just civilians. You know what I mean? They don't talk about that. And then Israel said, oh, we didn't do it. It's like, well, who did? Did they just drop out of the sky? You know? It's like, I'm sorry, I don't think that they're going to blow up their own beach.
Right. And what I find interesting about, you know, you're speaking of this, you know, the Israeli Navy vessel being struck. Well, you know, Bob is telling us here, you know, when you can get at the Israeli Navy, it serves notice that Hezbollah means war. Well, all you heard in the press down here was not about the fact that the ship attacked Lebanon first. All you heard was Hezbollah has declared war on Israel.
Well, you know,
that's all you've heard.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, say, you got to really pay attention. You know, go to the BBC. I heard Mike Malloy last night or the night before said don't trust anything you see on the American media right now. I mean, if you hear stories, then go research it, because, like I say, half the time they aren't giving you the whole story. You know, I thought it was interesting, this thing where you know, they go to Dear Leader, and Dear Leader is, I'm just curious. I mean, get the man a pig, let him kill the pig, please, make him happy. I mean, that thing was just almost like a loop. It's like, you know, it's like, apparently that's what they said. They said, Stahl, just keep talking about the pig. You know, just keep talking about the pig. And I saw, We had Gandhi out there saying, no one could have thought, every time I hear the words, no one could have thought out of Gandhi's mouth, it's sort of like, well, just change the channel now, because I know the lie is coming.
No doubt, eh?
No kidding.
I mean, that's sort of like a Reagan, you know, here you go again. You know, it's like, as soon as you hear it, don't worry about listening for the next 10 minutes. Because like I say, it's just going to be just, you know, crank it out. It's like,
so, well, along those lines, mate, you know, you say, you know, if anyone had ever known, you basically can turn around and say, well, we've known.
We knew you all just kind of took the paperwork and flushed it. You know, somebody told you and you went, that ain't important. You know, I mean, it's like say they've essentially just ignored this, you know, the whole Israel, Palestinian thing. I mean, they've done some things here and there, but I mean, Bill Clinton came as close as anybody has to getting them to, you know, to make peace. And a lot of people think that Bush-Cheney is what stopped it. That, you know, when they were getting close to making the peace agreements in 2000, the people at Bush-Cheney told them, you know, told people like Arafat said, oh no, the Israelis said, you know, we'll get you a better deal once we're in power. And that's one of the reasons they never got to a final peace accord.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, when you first came on air, you know, you made a really good point that, you know, you usually don't want to get in on this subject because you could end up not being able to get out of it. And I think this is one of the reasons why I do decide to go here, out of the pure frustration that very few people go here.
Well, it's the thing. It's the only people that you ever hear talk about it. I tell you, as I wish he would take a long vacation, is Tom Friedman. It's like, Mr. Friedman, you know, you don't say anything new. I mean, it's like, you, things change, you just keep saying the same things. It's like, I'm sorry. Right, the thing that bugged me the most right now in all this is, if any other country was doing this to another country in the Middle East, we'd say they were being terrorists.
The moment Israel bombed the first piece of the Palestinian electrical grid, they committed a war crime, but they will never be held accountable for it because of the semantics.
That's what I mean. They can do things that any other country in the Mideast would do. We would be, George Bush would be screaming terrorism.
Oh yeah. But see, it doesn't play into the quagmire that they've created and they continue to maintain. You know, I still am a firm believer that the chaos in Iraq is intentional.
Oh yeah, I mean that's one of the things. No. I think some of them, you know, it's like say some of these militia groups and stuff that is, you know, the violence isn't going to shut down because each one of these militia groups is pulling for their own side and they aren't going to disarm. You know, and it's like saying some of these are the people, you know, that some of them are looking for to maintain the order.
Well, I mean, this is exactly how Hamas ended up becoming, you know, the elected government in Palestine.
When they get elected, it's not real, but when it, you know, it's like, yeah, democratic elections, but not them.
But this goes to the heart of this semantics thing as well. Sorry, you're getting me going. Where was I going? 20 million thoughts at once, and they're all angry.
Luke, step away from the.
Okay,
back away.
No,
carefully.
No. Here's where I was going. Okay. Hamas came to power because. And this is coming straight from Antony, is that Arafat was corrupt. And the aid that was going to Arafat and his boys wasn't making it down to the regular Palestinian people. Hamas actually started making sure that the food and supplies got to the Palestinian people. They actually went out and tried to keep the electricity up, tried to keep the water flowing, and actually did real-world things for the Palestinians. So it's no surprise that the Palestinian people would elect these people into power. So well, then they elect themselves a government, and then everyone else in the world says, well, we don't like it, so we're not going to honor you.
Well, I mean, it's like you say, they did what everybody kept claiming. You know, well, if you're going to be a real power, you've got to, you know, support the people. So they did for the last probably 5 or 10 years. You know, they shut down most of their, high profile stuff, and they went down and they did the nuts and the bolts. You know, they did, like you say, they did the grunt work and took care of medical facilities and all these other things and got the people on their side. The people said, hey, you all are doing good work for us. So, you know, I mean, it's like, say, then, like you say, they get elected, and all of a sudden all the other countries are like, no, you can't do it. You did just what we wanted. We can't let you do that.
And I just can't handle the way that you can kind of pick and choose whose governments you're going to, you know, consider legitimate.
Well, I mean,
you know, and
we,
so
we can't, but we try to make sense. You know, us, not people like.
Oh, that was our first mistake.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so we actually thought that might actually make sense.
Yeah. Luke, man, thank you so much for your call. We're heading out to a break, and we will probably hear from you sometime very, very soon. We love hearing from you, buddy. And this is John and Bruce going out for the State Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
Still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business. Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider. So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. And was Bush saying he was the decider, or he was dipping into the cider?
Of the decider, sure.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
I hear
and
the
I'm
voices,
the decider.
But I'm the decider.
One more time.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived. And he said, you got to help me find people that will pull onions. Pluck them or whatever you do with them, you know.
But you got to pull them on or pluck them or whatever it is that you do.
Is he drinking again? What the hell's going on here?
Bruce, Bob is having a little bit of fun, shall we say, with digital technology. Okay, compose oneself. I just keep hearing, and I'm drinking a cider. You just sent me a link from the Raw story. What's going on here, Bruce?
Well, I want to hear one more Bush clip.
Okay.
One more, Bob. Just toss one at me. Smack me with it.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
Would that be rumors? Would that be rumors of the faked death of Ken Lay, Georgie? Anyway.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I inhaled the wrong end of my cigarette laughing there.
Welcome. Welcome.
Okay, man. Okay. That's enough. Okay. John,
hey,
why don't you drop?
Listen, the attack of September the 11th was a part of a broad strategy to get us to retreat from the world.
It's part of a broad strategy. It's a strategy.
I'm not sure if he was trying to say tragedy or strategy. I mean, I'm not so sure. Well, let me hear that one more time, Bob. I'm not sure what. Oh, well, maybe he won't give it to me.
Hey,
just sound.
Listen, the attack of September the 11th was a part of a broad strategy to get us to retreat from the world.
Huh. I keep thinking it sounds more like. Kind of like a drunk Bugs Bunny, you know. We need to employ a little strategy, or whatever that is.
I think we need to give us a little strategy, yes. Okay, so what I'm going
to... rumors on the internets. Block them.
Okay.
Block them. Block them.
What's that, George?
Block them.
That's what he says when he after right after they get done tarring and feathering people.
Pluck
them. Right. What do they call? That's
pluck
why they pluck them. That's right. Another plucker.
I'm sitting there thinking, you know, you could use this as a kind of standard response and do a fake interview with George. So it's like, so George, what do you have in store for the workers? You know, what do you say to the workers of America?
Pluck them.
And how do you feel about gay sex?
Pluck them.
Let's not go there.
I hear there's rumors on the internet.
Okay, so that's
just
that was our good friend Foster Brooks.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is block them.
Okay, this is just we're having a good old time now. If you want to hear some real good Bush clips, you can go to what's the I'm trying to think of that. It's wspeak.com. You can go on over there, and once you get over there, y'all can just go on and try to listen to that old donkey headed dude him there. wdubywaspeakdingodango.com. All right, wspeak.com. and when you go over there, just tell him I said pluck him.
I hear the rumors on the internet.
That you're a moron, Mr. President?
Pluck him.
Pluck him.
Wow, I actually referred to him as the president. That was sure against the kind of charter of the network.
I thought he was the decider.
No, he's just into the cider.
Oh, that's what it is.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
All right, that's enough, Bob. I think I'm starting to want to hurl. I mean, my stomach is going bloop, 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 bloop. Okay. You know what? This has been a really fun show today, and we had to have a little bit of levity there. This is such a tough discussion, and the bottom line is that, you know, those people over there will be fighting and killing each other for as long as one of them decides not to move to the Galapagos Islands.
Pluck them.
Okay. and I'm thinking that what we need to do is just, you know, is just say, oh, now he won't do it. My God, come on, Bob, give me a pluck him.
Pluck him.
Okay, thank you. All right, that's the last one. No more. No
pluck
more.
Him.
Okay.
Pluck him.
Ah!
Pluck him.
Okay, excuse me. Is there a shot? Did you hear a gunshot? Because I'm thinking I'm about to stick one in my mouth. Okay, no. We're not going to do that. You are listening to the Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, you can do that by availing yourself of our free speech phone lines. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. That's 1-877, the number 4, Head On. You're listening to Bruce and John on Fourth Estate Radio.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Hey, yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Right, you are back on Fourth Estate Radio right here with John Fox and Bruce Birch. And I just got to tell you, I love that song, man, because it's a song that you could do the shag to. Now, do you know what the shag is, John?
I think I have a concept, mate.
The shag is a dance that originated on the beaches of North Carolina.
Oh, and, sorry. I was talking about more like the more of an intimate shag. But sorry, that was an Australianism sliding in again. Please,
without talking about an Austin Powers shag, mate. we're talking about North Carolina shag, my brother. All right, now. Bob says. Anyway, okay. Well, yeah. We're not going to go there tonight. Now, what we are going to do though is we're going to talk a little bit now since we've gotten our little laugh out for the evening. We're going to talk about something else. Now, this is a story that just sort of came up. It's at the top of rawstory.com. Go over and check it out. And this is a comparative story about the difference between Israeli and Arab television and how they show different sides of the war. Now, according to this article, the Israeli first clip seems to be similar to an American news report. At no time is the legitimacy of military action or level of force questioned by the Israeli broadcast. As if it's a foregone conclusion that this is absolutely a justified action that is taking place. The second clip in this, now you're going to have to go listen to or go watch this. You can go to Raw Story, R-A-W, Story, and that's not W-D-U-B-Y-A, that's just a regular W. R-A-W, Story.com. Click on the video, the Israeli and Arab TV comparison story there. Now the Beirut broadcast from the United Arab Emirates provides some of the more accurate, rational, and reliable Arab news reporting. That report actually focuses on telling the story about concerns of conditions for the Lebanese in Beirut. Now, Note that John, that the Israel story seems to be more about the military action that's going on, and that the Lebanese story tends to be about the human cost, the human focus, if you will. Now, you know, also, though, on that side of the story, the Arab News report does not seriously question the motives of the Hezbollah, what they call resistance fighters. What really gets to me in this, John, is that, you know, I want to see a realistic, a truth-telling something that doesn't belittle, Hezbollah, and that doesn't, Israel look like they're the kings of the roost and fantastic. I mean, I want to see something that just states very simply and what exactly is going on. I mean, I have yet to see that. What I have seen is we've been talking about it all show, is drumbeats to war. It's all right. We get to use the music on CNN. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
It's time for war. Coming soon to a theater near you, CNN presents War.
Yeah, you've just reminded me of going back a couple of years when we first made the mistake to go into Iraq. Gail and I were sharing a house with a couple of friends of ours on the other side of town, and we were just watching the whole drumbeat thing, and mostly what we were getting feeds from here were CNN and they rebroadcast Fox News Channel. And even my Australian mates, who weren't as up on things at that time, let's say that they've picked up on their learning curve since, just sat there and watched it and said, why do I feel like I'm playing a PlayStation game without playing it? Because of just the graphics, the music, it all looked like a video game. And it was just, aren't we going into war here? They'd show, and the U.S. is going in with, this plane and this thing and that, and it's got this much munitions, and it can kill this many people, and isn't that great? And I just, it continues, There is the outright drumbeat that was happening in the mainstream media as we went in and when we first went in. But here you see the extension, of it in a much more subtle fashion, if I can even use such a term. Maybe not subtle, but not as, I don't know. I don't know what term I'm looking for there.
I got to tell you, though. I was just talking about the Shag, and guess what?
What?
When I said North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I've got to correct myself because it did start around the Myrtle Beach area, which is just a little bit over the border there from North Carolina, but it was in South Carolina. So I'm wrong. That's right.
It's still pretty local.
You know what, though? I got to tell you this, though, John. I think I'm going to hear about it. What do you think?
I have a feeling, too. And why do you have that feeling?
I think we have a caller that's going to tell me. How you doing, Jim?
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
We are doing quite fine.
Yeah, we're doing great. What's up?
I must admit, I'm not at all fair, and I understand you've been talking about the Middle Eastern conflict, right?
Right,
Well... ironically, tonight I just finished watching a film called On the Beat, which should be somewhat poignant since John Fox is in Australia. That film takes place in Australia.
And it's called On the Beach?
Too well, does it?
It's called On the Beach?
It's
familiar with the title, and I'm...
The last place left alive is the continent of Australia. And they're hoping that the radioactive clouds aren't going to reach that island or that continent, but it does.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful movie, you know, with Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner. And by the way, I think her birthday should be a national banking holiday.
Now, Ava Gardner was more.
And Fred Astaire and Anthony Perkins. It came out in 1962.
I'm going to have to go revisit that. I know the title, and I know that I must have seen it many, many, many moons ago, so far back that I don't actually recall the film.
It's based on the book by Neville Peart.
Right.
It's real good. The book's a good read. The film's an even better film. It really is. It's excellent.
And you know, you mentioned the fact that, you know, that some people were hoping that Australia may be the safe place on the planet. If there were, you know, a full-out thermonuclear warfare event. But, yeah, that has proven to be very, very false. You know, if Israel, say, just to put a theoretical example out, were to drop something on Iran, the fallout would be here within a few days.
Oh, yeah, the trade winds would carry it, but no problem. Anyway, I just hope that they can contain this thing. If at all possible, I understand that didn't Lebanon ask for a ceasefire?
I do believe they did, but this is one of the things that it gets so hard to really see through the way this stuff is reported to be able to, you know. To get to really what the crux of what's going on. I mean, I would not doubt that for a minute, considering the fact that we know well enough that Iran has been putting the hand out to the United States to talk for a couple of years, and Bush just refuses it and then goes out and spreads lies.
I don't know. Yeah, there is something, and I mean no disrespect to Lebanon, but do you remember that series called Golden Girls?
I do.
Oh, yes, with Maude the Man. I mean, or whatever, anyway.
With Rue McClanahan.
Yep.
Yes.
And Rue McClanahan had this woman visiting her named Jean, who just lost her life mate, and it turned out that Jean was a lesbian. And Blanche didn't know, or the part played by Rue McClanahan didn't know what that was. And I will never forget her looking into the camera saying, this is. Well, that's not so bad. Isn't Danny Thomas one?
Okay. Hey, Jim, did you know Ava Gardner's from North Carolina?
Smithfield.
That's right, Smithfield. You did know that. My gosh, man.
I visited her grave many times. So I used to go visit my folks driving down I-95 from Washington. So it goes right by Smithfield. Or it's reasonably close to it.
Okay, you know what? One day I'm going to offer up a fact, and you're not going to know it. You understand me, man? You're not going to know it.
What do you mean?
I don't know when that day comes.
A purpose. Absolutely. You know, I was watching John Zogby, who, you know, has the Zogby poll.
Yeah.
And now his son works for, or is in school there, learning Arabic. And I used to talk to his son a good bit in Washington. And he was talking about his own nephew, or. Not John Zogby was on, but there's two brothers. One has the Zogby poll, and the other has the Arab American League in Washington. And he said that his nephew was there. And, you know, I just wonder how in the world they're going to get, you know, this boy out of there, and also 25,000 other Americans, you know, away from that theater. I think the Pentagon has some kind of plan to fly to the Cyprus or something like that.
Well, one of the things that I didn't get to get into tonight that I found really, really kind of fascinating, and I think would have to be very, very scary for a couple of young Australians, is dual citizens in Lebanon, if they're there, can be conscripted for service. And in the Sydney Morning Herald this morning, they're talking about at least three Australian men holidaying in Lebanon could be conscripted into the Lebanese army and forced to fight if the country decides to defend itself against Israeli attacks. And I have to give credit to the Sydney Morning Herald for actually wording it as defending itself against Israeli attacks, as opposed to declaring war on Israel, which tends to be the way they do this. So you have dual nationals over there, and it seems as though if you have something like Lebanese citizenship, you could be over there visiting family, and you're not going to be able to go home. These guys' passports have been confiscated.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But I would think, you know, now the reason this thing started was because Hezbollah had captured three Israeli soldiers. Is that right?
Well, actually, it was right.
That was like the case of Sedaris, or I mean the case of Salah, the immediate cause right. for that war. And
flashpoint.
In all defense of Israel, hasn't Hezbollah been giving them quite a bit of trouble over there?
Well, yes. I mean, in a word, yes. They're all causing trouble for each other. But then going and bombing Lebanese, you know, government buildings and whatnot, when the Lebanese government really has no influence over Hezbollah, that's just blind retribution on anyone. That happens
to be a test player on the board over there, particularly since they're the only ones that have nuclear capability that we know of. You know, mm-hmm. I mean no disrespect to Israel, but I wish that the good Lord had placed Israel somewhere else. I know if I had the power, I would take Israel and I would just remove it from that part of the world and put half of it at Lake Tahoe and the other half at Atlantic City.
Well, I mean, there were two other locations under discussion at the time. One was off of Argentina, was that it, Gail? And Uganda. And so, this is something Gail and I are going to look into this week, too, is to actually look back and find out, because I don't know, how was the decision made?
For example, when the Nazi policy was immigration, they had considered Madagascar. And that didn't work out too well. And so, unfortunately, their policy changed from immigration to, quote, in big quotes, evacuation to the east. So,
right.
That part of the world for that arid, barren part of the world, it just seems as though that, there's been so much conflict there. I just don't understand how that part of the world could be so hotly contested, considering that it's a pretty uninviting climate with an equally uninviting landscape, you know?
Well, it used to not be quite so barren and quite so dead. The conflict and the war over the centuries, and especially over the last century, has done a great deal to kill the fertility of that land. And where, you know, and also the Israeli corporations, from what I understand, are actually taking control of over all the water. But, Jim, I'm going to have to wrap it there because we're coming up on the final break before we kind of wrap this puppy up. And as always, it's a pleasure to have you ring up because you always bring something to the conversation.
Well, one more thing. That's the trouble. Israel is trying to cut off all access to the sea and really is trying to establish some type of commercial hegemony over that part of the area in which these people are trying to coexist, and that is one of the points of conflict which will always be there as long as their policy is stated as such, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim, and with that, I'm going to have to take this break. We really appreciate you calling. We are going to take a real quick break because we got to come back and wrap this puppy up, Bruce. We're almost out of time. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network.
Founding fathers and mothers, and we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total cap.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have to put a treat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio. This is great.
This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.